Hey, Cindy. Wonderful to hear your voice in person, sort of.
You too. Is Dean going to call in as well? Is it just you going to be calling in?
Oh, he's right here.
Dean is calling.
We're all calling in.
Well, let me play some of your music while I talk about your illustrious background. I knew a little bit about you, but I am so glad to and grateful to Beth Ann Hilton for turning me on to you two marvelous, groundbreaking musicians, peace workers, and people who absolutely inspire the world. And I can't wait to really talk about your beautiful new work, which I'm going to play a little bit right now. What you did is beautiful. Dean Evanson is a New Age musician, composer, producer, and videographer. I don't know if you're still based in New York or you're based in the Northwest now.
In the Northwest.
Northwest, yeah.
Northwest.
We met in New York in 1968, but we've been everywhere, but this is where we are now, Northwest.
Well, you've got quite an amazing background with a degree in molecular biology. You worked in Manhattan as a recording engineer for Regent Sound with a lot of Atlantic recording artists. How cool is that? You got to work with the amazing Mose Allis and Eric Clapton, Roberta Flack. I love them all. You only do composing and producing, but you do lovely videography work. And on top of that, you've done so many amazing, inspiring albums. I think you're up to like 80 different pieces you've done over the years. Is that about eight, right? 80 albums?
Something like that.
You lose track after
and
a while.
And videos and DVDs and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you do the whole inspired realm of video photography, graphics, writing, music, and dance. And Dudley, of course, you play harp and zither. And I love your site. I went to your site. Is it called Sound Recordings, or is that it?
Soundings. Soundings.com.
It's a lovely site, and everyone should check it out. Plus, you, Dudley, wrote Quieting the Monkey Mind, co-authored with, of course, Dean, and lovely work. Now, I want to talk to you about your beautiful, beautiful new piece, because I happen to love Monet. I happen to be a huge, huge fan of Monet, and you obviously relate to him as well. In Monet's garden is this fantastic piece you did in the gardens. You went to Giverny. You went to the various museums. I think, is it the Andre? I know you went to the different lovely French ones. Is it D'Orsay and
Musée d'Orsay, L'Orangerie, the Louvre, Musée Montmartre, Monet, all the ones in Paris, and then of course visited Honfleur. We went to Honfleur and we went to Etretat. So we went to a lot of places that he had painted. In addition to being in Giverny with the gardens, we stayed in a lovely renovated inn there, and we're like a half a block from the garden. So we went there every day for 5 days, and pretty special.
It was one of my most inspired times in one of my trips. I went there, and there is this, it's one of the few places you can go that you literally can transport yourself back to the time of Monet. The gardens are almost exactly as they were in the pictures in the beautiful, beautiful paintings that he did. You can literally stand in the same place and see that beautiful bridge, and you can see that little boat there, and you can see the same flowers in the garden. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, it was wonderful. And it just going there, you become peaceful. You're enveloped by the peace of nature.
Well, and when you're there,
get a piece of nature.
Absolutely. And you can also realize how he created a whole impressionistic community. There were people and artists that moved to that whole little village that came there just to be around him and his artwork.
Yeah.
Well, he also had a large family. He had 6 children, 2 with his first wife and 4 with his second wife. And so he had people visiting. He had, heads of state and all kinds of artists showing up. But mostly he just liked to be outside painting. And so Dean loves to talk about his various, how many canvases would he be working on at a time?
Oh, I don't know. It varied from location to location. But he would take a number of canvases and paint a particular canvas at, say, 1 o'clock, and then work on it for 2 hours, and then put that one aside and work on the 2 o'clock one. And he was capturing the various subtle lighting that was happening during the day.
So, and you've done so many amazing pieces with a lot of people. What drew you to this project of immersion into Monet and Monet's garden and all his work? I mean, this one sounded like it was a little different than other things you've done, as far as the way you really just kind of embodied the energy and channeled the feeling that he created with his artwork. What was the creative force behind that?
Well, I've been interested in Monet's work since high school. And it's just very powerful what Monet did with the other artists at that time being radical and looking at art different than classical artists were looking at it.
Yeah. Well, he was an innovator, and I think what was interesting for us as we learned about that was his pushing the envelope and pushing, the standards and the traditions. And it took a lot. He had a lot of struggle in the early days just trying to support himself and his family. And it's kind of like how when we first started doing our music, there was nothing like it. People said we'd have to create our own genre because they'd never heard anything so kind of relaxing and peaceful.
Which we did.
Mm-hmm. We and many other people created, kind of the new age genre. So it's just like become accepted that people realize there's a kind of a music that has a high intention of creating sort of healing or relaxation or meditation or something. It's more than just music. It really carries kind of the intention of the musician and also the person listening. I think that's really important to acknowledge because people use the music with meaning. It's more than just background music. It becomes part of their lives, and it's helped so many people over the years. It's been pretty amazing to watch it develop.
Very, very well said. Yeah, very well said, Dudley, because some people now are creating a lot of ambient music, but I think there is a definition difference, and there's definitely an experiential difference between actually meditating and being uplifted. As I took your beautiful music from Monet's garden, meditated to it. Just so peaceful and beautiful. That's a little different than just doing ambient music where you're just, doing electronic stuff that's kind of just wandering. Nothing against ambient. There's a whole field of people. But I know when you say you were there in the beginning stages of New Age, a handful of other really talented people, including people like, Paul Horn. And at that time,
Paul, yes.
I don't think they even called it, right? I mean, they didn't even, I don't think.
Oh, no, he was an innovator. Plus, Paul was a meditator as well. He really was in India learning a meditation, studying and going deep. He was spending days in silence. And, so he took it on. And I think when we first were coming up with our kind of music, we'd been through the 70s. We lived in a school bus. We videoed all these gurus and Native Americans, but we were learning what there was this new way of being. It was ancient, but it was new to us, and so we really wanted to kind of capture that in the music. And it just turned out that how important it was to include the natural sounds with our music. That was, we were we'd heard the Environments records. We'd also heard Paul Horne play flute on Taj Mahal. You know, we loved that. So that really gave us a kind of an inspiration, but it was just something Dean was doing anyway with his flute. And then finally it was time to, okay, let's make some albums here. And so the massage therapists and the yoga teachers and meditators and people just went, oh, my gosh, we need this. Because this is a crazy world, and we need something that's going to help calm us down and make us feel more peaceful.
So true. And I was blessed to interview Paul Horne quite a few times because my friend Tom Vendetti, who had happened to call me and said, I used Dean's music in one of my very first pieces 20 years ago, and he loves you. Dom Vendetti does a lot of, has done some wonderful documentaries on Tibet. And Paul Horne and I and Tom went to...
Please put us in touch with him, because if he's done stuff on Tibet, we're definitely interested.
Oh, yeah, no, he's done wonderful pieces with Paul Horne, and Paul Horne went to some lovely places, including Tibet and Mount Kailash with him. But on your Monet's Garden... I'm going to play a little bit more here of another piece. Did you create these songs while you were there or afterwards? Or what was, you know, was it just being there that inspired these songs? Or what was the evolution of the creation of these songs?
The music came from the garden, but we did the recording of the music back when we got into the States. And... Mm.
Well, Dean had recorded the field, done the field recordings, so he this is how we've always done our music, with the field recordings and then adding the music later, kind of being inspired. So it was pretty amazing to, you know, hear the the French birds with their French accents.
I was going to ask you that.
Very, very different feel.
I was going to ask you if those really are French birds, because I was listening to them. I love birds. And I was listening going, that sounds not like the birds I know. So you recorded the sound of the birds that you can hear here if you listen here. You recorded that at the garden?
Yes. Yes, those are French birds.
I can hear the accent.
Parlez-vous français?
Well, yeah. Can you imagine being birds in that garden? How nice, what a nice life, huh?
Yeah.
Happy life. Lots of color, lots of water, flowers blooming at all times. And interestingly enough, where we live now, we have, you know, a few acres. The property we purchased about 20 years ago was planted with flowering rhododendrons and azaleas and willows and all sorts of lilies and just amazing amount of plants that we were fascinated to find are similar to what Monet has in his garden. So we're very grateful to have a place that we can also continue to make videos. In fact, there is a video on our YouTube channel that's called Spring in Monet's Garden, and it's you can hear the whole album right there. It's on our Soundings of the Planet YouTube channel. But it's just nice because Dean did so many videos there while we were there, and then we put it with the music. So it's kind of fun to feel like you're really there. And we were able to get away from the crowds. There were, of course, a lot of people there, but you don't necessarily see so many of them in the videos. So it's just more like you're there, walking through the gardens, hanging out on the bridge.
Well, it's a meditative spot. And speaking of meditation, I remember being there, and when I was at that lake just below where his beautiful gardens are, you feel like stopping. You feel like just transporting yourself back to the time of Monet. There's a magic there. The vibration, the energy is just so, I mean, literally stillness that's present, and its energy is just so beautiful. And I have to say, the family and the group that's maintained it have done a magnificent job. And I don't even know if it's open at this point. Isn't it interesting you were able to go and do all this before COVID hit? Because you wouldn't have been able to go to the museums you went to and a lot of the places. And I don't know if, like I say, I don't know if Giverny is open now or not.
I think it is open, but it's, you know, much more minimal. In fact, that may be better. There may be fewer crowds.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
No, we were so blessed to be there in 2019.
It was very fortunate that we got to go. The timing on it was perfect in terms of us getting over there and not having a lot of people to contend with.
And I want to talk about the other two museums because, I mean, I happen to, I think the D'Orsay, I'm probably not pronouncing it exactly right.
No, you're right. It's D'Orsay. Musée d'Orsay. So yeah, that's the one that's
beautiful.
The Impressionist Museum.
Oh, it's such a wonderful museum with that fantastic clock. It was the train station, and they did such a beautiful job restoring it. But some of the Impressionistic work, there's fantastic, of course. But I'm glad to see, and one of my last trips I went to Paris, I went to see the pieces in, I probably really won't pronounce it, sorry, Orangerie, or the one that's on the other side.
Well, it's L'Orangerie, and if you think about it, it was an orangerie, une orangerie was a place where they grew oranges. So these were early greenhouses. So it was a concept of, you know, they wanted to bring some kind of tropical vegetation into a northern climate, so they made these sort of greenhouses. And when Monet, at the end of his life, and in fact it was around World War One, he was painting these, he called them les grandes décorations. So it was these big decorations, and they were very, very wide paintings. And it was his kind of art therapy getting him through the war. But when he knew he wanted to donate them to the French, the nation of France, and then he insisted that they would be in this oval, it would be in some kind of an oval building or an oval room. And so there were two of these main oval rooms that do contain the paintings now, and that's L'Orangerie, which is at the north end of, or one of the ends of the Tuileries Gardens, and then you can walk from there all the way to the Louvre. So we had a great day visiting both L'Orangerie and the Louvre on the same day. And, of course, there aren't as many Impressionist paintings at the Louvre, but the Musée d'Orsay is where you can see all the many Impressionist painters. But the L'Orangerie is specifically upstairs, particularly, is all Monet.
The L'Orangerie.
And there's another museum called Musée Martin Monet, and that houses a lot of his, well, later works, but also some of the earlier ones.
I didn't know about that one at all.
But those are when he started losing his eyesight, and you can see that he's really using splotches of color, and the whole thing shifted a bit, but, you know, they're still beautiful.
What has surprised me in getting into this, I've finally getting the gist of the depth of what work Monet did. He was painting all the time. He put out so many paintings. It's amazing. I don't know what the number on them is, but we watched a piece on...
I think there were about 1,500 paintings.
Oh, my gosh.
One program went through, which is...
Wow.
We were stunned to realize how many more paintings that we'd never even seen. But he was just constantly painting. He loved it, and that was his passion.
He had...
And that's kind of what I see in Dean, too.
That's what I was going to say. That sounds like there's that same energy.
By the ocean or a river or wherever we are, mountains, he's up there with his camera.
Yeah.
So it's just fun, because then it inspires the music, and we just keep making more albums with our wonderful friends and collaborators.
Well, in regards to both of those subjects, when I went to L'Orangerie, it's not like anything else you've been to, because these are, you sit in a room and the paintings are massive. I mean, you are literally like in a surround sound. Speaking of soundings, you're sitting there and they're huge. I mean, they're in a circular kind of setting, and they're massive paintings, not like anything else that you see. So you literally are encouraged in a way. You need to sit there and meditate in that room to just kind of take it all in, don't you?
Exactly. And it was sweet when we were there just watching. I mean, of course, everyday tourists were there, but there were also these little groups of school children that were being taught, to understand art or to appreciate art. And we loved coming across the kids that were learning about the paintings and things like that. But they all seemed so interested. They were fascinated.
Well, it's like living art at that point when you're, you know, surrounded by it. I also do want to, in response to the video, I love your video pieces. And if I encourage everyone to watch the videos from Monet's garden at soundings.com, because they are beautifully done. They carry the feeling of the art with, again, like you said, the flowers. And you feel like you're just transported when you look at the video with the music. And it's done in a very artistic way and a charming way. So I have to commend you. I saw the video before I realized that you had that background of years and years in video. And it's interesting because your early years in video, you were doing black and white work. I just watched the video of your wedding was it 1970, I believe, in Reno, right?
That's it.
It was. I felt it was so realistic. It was like I felt like I was there. You know, I felt like I was present, and it was so real and sweet that I just felt like I knew you from watching just that video. So. And I used to do video and videography work, and I know how hard it is staying up to date with all the equipment, with everything you need. My gosh, it's a changing medium, although I imagine right now it's a lot easier for you to go to a place like Monet's Garden and videotape with the smaller digital things than it was, you know, when the bigger cameras were in place and everything. But I just congratulate you on the beautiful job that you did on these videos. And isn't it interesting now, Dudley, and how everyone now has to have a video if they have a music piece?
Well, you know, it is true. It used to be, or it was starting to become, anybody who had a computer could make their own audio recording. But now I think video has become a lot more important in terms of sharing the intention or the feeling of the music and things like that. So we are fortunate that we have a number of video people on our team, and we do our own videos, and so it's just like it's so natural. And of course, now I just got my new iPhone, and it's such good quality, three little cameras and everything. It's probably better than it's so much better than those early tapes we were making. We've probably gone through a dozen different video technologies to even get to where we are right now. But you know, that's the point. You got to stay tuned into the changes, and I think that's you know, you can be a pioneer, you can be an innovator, but if you don't stay up with the times will just roll right past you and somebody else will be picking up the pieces. So
I want to commend you both on the way you merge you know, it's interesting, having just watched your video of your wedding in the 1970 to now. So I mean, here you are, I mean, my gosh, 50 years married. Congratulations.
We're still having a lot of fun. It's more fun than ever.
I hear...
Because we get to stay home more now. We like that in a way.
Well, I hear the merging in the music, how you beautifully know how to... it's not even like it's separate. When you add either the harp or the bells, the Tibetan bells, you know, it's like it's coming from the same place. And I think that is something that is hard to... you couldn't have that any other way except the closeness of your consciousness, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, we love playing music together, so we've been fortunate to be able to do that so many years, but also that Dean has, with his flute playing, I'm more of a drone instrument a lot with, mm-hmm. of the times, and I know Dean enjoys playing with me, but we've collaborated with some fabulous musicians, some friends from Maui.
Yeah,
we did some work with Sinkar. She lived in Maui until she passed away.
And Huckabee.
But Daniel Paul lives in Maui.
He's yeah,
a friend
yeah.
of ours. We love him. Yeah. And then Dean did an album that it was kind of a surprise. But Tim Alexander, he's the drummer for Primus, and he lives in Bellingham, and had used Dean's music for his own healing for probably 20 years before we even met him, and then he wanted to do an album together, so we did an album called Net of Indra with Tim Alexander. And then there's Scott Huckabee. He spent a lot of time in Maui, too. He's a fabulous guitarist. Andy Rachel is our harpist. She lives in Mexico. And then
you've done
collaborated
some
with
native...
Lee Shanting. He's from China. I mean, it just goes on and on. But it's been so great for Dean to be able to play with all these fabulous musicians.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Well, you know,
and meeting people who, musicians who are in, have in peace is the intention of their work, has been wonderful.
Well, that's been part of your
Tom
work.
Tom Barabbas is in.
We are literally starting a nonprofit called the Peace Through Music Foundation. And so we're just barely, we have a little web page up for now, but it's going to really develop over time. But we, because Peace Through Music has been our motto all these years, we wanted to have a kind of a foundation that would be able to carry the message to all musicians who have the intention of using their music for peace. And they could be playing in small community venues or big arenas, but, you know, different people, you know, we're just interested in supporting the musicians and learning how they're all working and sharing music with the intention of peace. It's called peacethroughmusic.foundation. You can find out more about the Peace Through Music Foundation.
Well, I support that 100% and like to help. I got the UNESCO Peace Award through my friends Rupam Sharma and also Kevin Mackey. So I've been doing these videos called Peace Projects. And so it's so important, and that's been one of my intention with my music and my words as well. So I support you 100%. I think
we'll have to interview you then.
I would love to.
We'll share what you're doing, because the whole goal of the Peace Through Music Foundation is to illuminate the many things that people are doing to help. One of the musicians Dean has collaborated with is Peter Ali. He's a Native American flute player whose father is from Morocco and his mother was from is a Pima Indian. And they do Native American flute and silver flute. That's the album. But Peter is out there all the time teaching people how to make flutes. He's sharing his music on reservations, or he's really using the music as a service to the community. And that's what we want to highlight with the Peace Through Music Foundation.
I love it. So the best site for people to go to get Monet's Garden would be Soundings, or what site's the best to get that?
Well, go to soundings.com. That's our website. But if they want to buy it, I mean, we're everywhere. If you type in Dean Evanson, he's on all streaming services. So whether you listen on Spotify or Pandora or Amazon or Apple, you'll find our music. And Monet's Garden will pop right up. So we appreciate when people follow Dean Evanson, because it helps just so they can. I mean, I'm on there too, but I don't have as many plays and listens. But Dean's kind of the man. He's got it all. It's wonderful.
It's a beautiful, beautiful collaboration. It's a fantastic piece that's timeless. This one is not ever going to get old. You definitely feel like you are literally there in Monet's garden, and you feel that lovely peace and that energy. And it's just one of those things, if you get it, you will be listening to it over and over and over again. I thank you so much, and I want to thank Beth Ann Hilton, who was kind enough to connect me with you, because I feel like I just am an enthusiastic supporter and follower of what you do now, and I really am so glad I found out about your works. So please take care of yourself, stay well, and we'll stay in touch, okay? And a big aloha to you.
Aloha, Cindy. Aloha.
Thank you.
And we look forward to learning more about your music as well. So we will stay tuned. We've got so many projects. We'd love to come on again sometime and share.
Oh, definitely.
About.
Thank you.
In the meantime, everyone have a beautiful Peace Through Music kind of day.
I love it. Thank you, and a big aloha. And